Hi, this is comedian Liz Blanc, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Gigi Chick, presented by Above Below Entertainment.
The default setting where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I am your host, Jess Falstick.
And I am co-host Gigi Chick.
Today we have the fucking funniest comedian in all of Cleveland. I've only drank one beer and I can't fucking talk.
Just get ready. Right? Just get ready.
This is probably our best guest. You're going to be our season finale because this is the coolest fucking guest we've
had. Oh, nice. So far. Thank
I was you. Literally so excited I squealed. I was like, woo!
Ms. Mary Santora, how are you?
Hi, good. I'm really good.
Thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate
you
it.
You said your default setting is optimism.
Yeah, I think I'm a pretty optimistic person.
Oh yeah, you are.
Yeah, I have my freakouts and my moments of like, what am I gonna do? Or you know what I mean, like those kind of things. But for the most part, I'd say I'm always kind of a glasses half full. Always trying to make sure everything, you know, keep my head level.
That's
like,
what
it's
we need.
Gonna work out. Yeah. Like everything's gonna be fine.
For sure.
You know.
Yeah. Oh my God, I'm gonna belch a lot into this mic. Just so
oh,
you
boy.
Know,
good.
This is how it
let
goes.
It out, girl.
Well, that's the thing. I always love like your. Your posts are always just so, like, smiley and happy, and, like, I think I've actually tried to, like, take a cue from that, because I get really pissed off at shit, especially in the comedy community. I think it gets really easy to do, because everybody's a bunch of cynical assholes.
Oh, yeah.
And just furthermore, I think in general, just the current, like, atmosphere of the world, I think it's really easy to get sucked into just, like, all the negativity and bullshit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You're always just kind of like, you're always looking really cute in your photos. you're always smiling, which, okay, we got to talk about this. So Mary almost always smiles in her photos. One of the fucking funniest things that happened recently is that someone was critiquing your smile. That woman was like, I hate when you do the side smile.
Oh, yeah. It was actually a couple months ago.
What the hell is that?
It's so stupid. I make the same face in like almost not all of my Instagram posts, but a lot of them. Where it's just like a side smirk. And this lady like went in on me like about all of my pictures looking the same or whatever. So the next one I posted was just me kissing my middle finger, which somebody posted a picture of Kid Rock doing the same thing. And I was like, I knew it felt right. You know what I mean? Like,
I knew there was a reason that felt so natural.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, trying to be on the lighter side and just, you know, it's just so funny because I remember when I was a kid, when I get really upset about things, I would cry, which I still cry, but I cry for like all things when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm aggravated. Crying is like my go-to.
Yeah. Mm.
But whenever I'd get really upset, my dad would always ask me if I could change whatever was happening. He's like, is crying going to make this better? Or is yelling? And it's like, no, it'll make me feel better, but that's right. I can't change it. So I just try to, things that I don't really have control over, I just try to like, all right. There's nothing I can do about this. So I can either be pissed off and angry, or I can just kind of hope for the best.
Yeah.
You know? So
well,
I try to.
What I love about that philosophy, too, is I think a lot of people are just like, oh, I'm just going to try to, like, because there's the longest time I think people like to shame people for crying. And it's like, well, you should fucking get to express how you feel. Like, you shouldn't have to feel shitty about crying. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And I don't know, like, there was a stigma for a while, like, the girl who cries at work. Like, yeah, if you cry at work all the time, maybe you should get it together. But, like, you should be allowed to fucking cry sometimes.
Right. I mean, I went to go see that new Mr. Rogers movie.
Oh, I would have bawled my eyes
out. I saw it twice. I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow.
I bawled just as hard both times.
Dude, I cry at everything. And that's like, I cried at Deadpool 2. I watched that. Serious, and I'm like I'm a pretty hopeless romantic. I really
everyone comment
am.
On our page if you two have cried at Deadpool 2.
Oh my god, dude, I was bawling my eyes out because I was like, he finally found love. Like, it was just a mess. But yeah, like So I guess my second default setting would be crying.
Like, optimism and crying.
Right, but I cry at everything. Like I
the
said, I'll get really
match.
Happy and I'll just cry. I cry at weddings. I don't even like wearing makeup to weddings because I know I'm gonna cry. I just know it's gonna happen. And that's out of happiness, out of oh my god, you're so in love. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Is everyone in your family like that, or are you pretty much an outlier in that regard, or
in optimism?
Yeah, well, and just
or in
even
crying.
Like, both. Let's go with both.
I don't really know, to be honest with you. My younger sister has issues with like anxiety and things like that, so sometimes it's hard for her to see that way or think that way, or she'll feel like, you know, whatever's happening right now is the end of the world. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's tough too. My older siblings are significantly older. Like my older brother, my older brothers are 5 and 6 years older than me. And then my older sister is 10 years older than me, 12 years older than me.
Okay.
So I would like to think they are, but I honestly, does it sound shitty that I can't speak to them?
No, yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, that's enough of an age gap. You probably didn't spend, a lot of time.
I haven't spent a whole bunch of time like actually talking and getting to know on that kind of a level. Like my brother's and sister, older sister, have had families since I can remember and been out on their own and doing their own thing, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I would hope so.
When did you first notice, like, is it one of those things where do you find yourself being the person when everyone else is kind of just, because I know you were a cheerleader. I mean, like, are you a cheerleader for, like,
I love
your friends and, like, life? Like, I mean,
try to be, yeah. I mean, I really do. I try to be uplifting and happy for people, and like especially when my friends get opportunities or whatever it might be, or you know, like I said, get married or buy a house or whatever it might be. But there's plenty of times where everyone's like, what are we gonna do? Or like, I guess I've had those kind of moments in my family where shit's falling apart and everyone's like, what's gonna happen? Like, all right, let's just try and keep it together, it's gonna work out, like we'll figure it out, you know, take things one day at a time or whatever it might be. And I'm full of those useless, you know, quotes,
cliches,
one day at a time. Whatever.
You're an inspirational poster with
exactly.
Yeah.
Jeez, but the one you'd buy at Target that like everyone has. You know what I mean? like live, laugh, love.
Live, laugh, love. That's so great.
But yeah.
I mean, like, when did you first realize you were kind of like the cheerleader of your social circle, your family circle?
Well, I've always been that way, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess it never really like was a click moment where it's like, oh, you know, but whenever there's issues or problems or whatever it might be, I'm like tragic things, you know, like my sister, my older sister, unfortunately, a couple of years ago, her ex-husband passed away. Okay. And it was like everyone was so panicked and freaking out. What are we going to do? And trying to think of everything all at once, like, oh, you know, the family or the this or that, or, you know, he lives 2 hours away, like whatever it might be. And I'm always kind of the one that kind of calms everybody down.
Okay.
Like, relax. Like, let's get through right now. Let's go to the house. Let's get through this part. Let's get through that part. You know? So when situations like that arise where it's also someone has to take that role, and I feel like I fall into it very nicely to kind of keep things together, remind everyone it's going to be okay. Like, things are going to be fine. And then, I mean, and being with comedy and everything like that, like, humor also alleviates situations too.
Sure.
So having that to fall back on, I think, also helps when, you know, other people are freaking out.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, do you find you've ever had to diffuse, like, a volatile or tense situation before?
Not that's coming to mind.
More consoling sort of a thing just to get everybody.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. You know, being there for friends or family when they, you know, have issues or things like that. It was funny because I had a lot of friends that would ask me for relationship advice when I was in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And then we broke up and then half those friends don't talk to me anymore. And I'm just like
at all?
You don't know about relationships.
Okay, gotcha, gotcha,
what, just because mine didn't work
right,
out?
Right, yeah.
You know? So it's funny stuff like that. But yeah, I don't know. It just seems like I try to keep that upbeat personality. Mm-hmm. Like, no matter, and I'm not saying, oh, I'm so happy all the time. Like, I have my shit days and I get mad and I get angry about things. But what I try to do to kind of keep myself centered is just go back to like, okay, well, you know, say I'm freaking out about money. Like, my bank account's going to overdraw. I'm like, all right, well, this is it. This is all I can do. The money's already coming out. So unless I pick up a shift at work, there's nothing I can do about this.
Sure.
You know? So it's like things like that, just trying to keep myself balanced.
It sounds like you're very like acceptance and zen-y like a lot too, like where you're just like,
I try to be, I
done.
Try to be.
Yeah.
It's, I'm not going to say that I totally am or I'm 100% with that, but like I try very hard to like only get upset about things that maybe I do to myself.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But even then it's like, hey, you did this to yourself. Like, what are you pissed about?
Yeah.
Like, you did this, get it together and don't do it again. You know?
Do you find that helps you to kind of like bounce back and move on to the next thing pretty quickly? Or do you dwell sometimes? Or?
It depends. Like, I had a really, really terrible audition recently for comedy, and I was very upset about it, like hysterically upset, like crying my eyes out for like 2 straight days.
Aww.
But I tried to talk myself out of it after that. You know, like, I think it's important to let yourself have feelings.
Sure.
Be sad, be angry, you know, but also remember it's going to be okay.
Like,
whatever that is not the end of the world. Well, you know, like, that audition was not meant for me. That was not my opportunity. There'll be plenty more opportunities, and it sucked that I tanked that one so hard, you know? Because it could have been, but that's not the right one, you know?
Yeah.
I think it also stems from a very, I believe in fate, and I get so much shit from a lot of friends for that, where it's just like, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be. Like, I have a predetermined, like,
destiny.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I really do believe that. I think that where you're going to end up, and and who you're going to be and grow into is already determined. It's just how you get there.
Our good friend Weed with this conversation.
All right, there you go. It's just how you get there, I think. And you determine your path to getting there, but certain aspects of your life are like the big things, like, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it might be, getting a TV show or getting married or right. whatever, those things are determined, I think,
yeah.
personally.
Absolutely.
So I think that helps with the, hey, it's not meant to be kind of oh, thing. Yeah.
Do you have a long-term sort of view as far as, like, because a lot of people have that sort of fatalistic point of view, but they also sort of have this, like, we get to make the free decisions that lead us up to our ultimate
yeah.
predetermined fate.
Is 100%. Kinda, yeah, absolutely. It's just like, it might be, you know, you are, whatever, I don't know. You are meant to get married when you're 25 or whatever it might be. Sure, why not? This is going to happen. It might not be the one you're with forever, but this person might teach you A, B, and C along the way, and that's why they were in your life. Or, you know, I use my sister. She said this before. She got pregnant a couple years ago. Her son's 4 now. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I needed that. Like, I was going crazy. I needed him to slow me down and to ground me. Like, okay. that's why I got pregnant. Like, okay. So I think it could be, you know, you're going to have a son when you are ready to have a son. Like, yeah. you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. she was ready for another kid because she needed to be grounded, you okay. know, stuff like that. So, I mean, a lot of people I've talked to about this, it'll lead into, like, religion and things like that. But it's just like a, I don't know.
It's more of just, like, an everything happens for a reason and yeah. a purpose.
I really do believe that. And yeah, I do, too. Saying that cliche, no, I mean, everything happens for a reason, but I think it does. And even if it's people that come into your life for a short period of time, someone you meet at work that only works with you for a couple months, like, they are either meant to teach you or something, or there's a lot of times where you're meant to be in their life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You like never know. You right. never know what impact you, like, have
right.
on people.
Exactly.
That's, like, I've had instances before where someone, like, came up to me years later and was like, yeah, you said this to me, or...
And you didn't even remember the conversation.
You were so yeah. nice to me, mm-hmm. and you came out to the car to, like introduce yourself to me, and I was really shy, and I was, like, not didn't have any friends, and yeah. you, like... Because you did that, I was like, oh, okay, maybe I'll do it. And then now I'm, like, that's completely, so like, out of my... And it, I was like, what? You yeah. know?
And
so you have no idea.
You might not even remember that conversation. Yeah.
Right.
You know what I mean? Not have even thought
I
twice
about
it. I
hadn't thought about it in mm-hmm. years, yeah.
And that's, yeah, that's the important stuff, I feel like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sort of on that subject, because I think that's something that only recently occurred to me is my whole life I've dwelled on how others have impacted me, but at least from a positive perspective, I don't think it's even ever crossed my mind how I've affected other people. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always right. worried about, I don't want to be a bitch. I don't want to be an asshole. I don't want to be a jerk, you know, that right. kind of thing. But I've never necessarily, like, thought about, am I affecting other people positively? And with doing comedy, do you get sort of a lot of feedback that you were just like, oh, shit, like, I made this person happy. I made this person
Dude,
think.
The one time, it still makes me tear up when I think about it. It was one time after our show at Hilarities, I had a lady come up to me and, she had tears in her eyes, and she was so happy. And I was like, I was just hosting. And, yeah. you know, she shook my hand, and she was like, she was in from out of town. God, I'm going to tear up thinking about it. She was in from out of town at the Cleveland Clinic, mm-hmm. and her dad was, like, terminally ill. Aww. And she was saying that, like, it had been months since she had left. And she came up to me and was like, oh. and I know. And she was like, I can't thank you enough for just, and I don't even, I was just up there telling jokes. Yeah, you know what yeah, I mean? Yeah. I wasn't thinking anything of it.
And you specifically, she like.
And she, yeah, wow. she came up to me and said that. And, you know, she loosened me up and got me ready for the rest of the show. And she just, like, thanked me. And it's one of those things where every time I have a bullshit set or I take an audition or I do this, I'm just like, there's somebody in the audience.
Oh, yeah. making somebody
that
happy.
It's so much more to yeah. them than it is to me.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Well, you made a really great
exactly.
point a couple weeks ago about, like, you know, we only know what people tell us, or we only know what people, and, like, everything else is, like, the iceberg.
We only
under
know
the water.
Things about people, like, what they show us.
Right. And
there's,
like,
so much more that people don't say or show, and you'll never know.
In you the might... context we were talking about, it was Ryan was on, and he was talking about cynicism. So we were talking about how everybody's, like, a rapist and a murderer. Because
oh,
we only
yeah.
know, we only know about the ones that get caught, but there's, like, all these other, like, murders and rapists. But
yeah.
to that point, also, whenever, but, like, to
it's
your.
A different vibe.
To your,
yeah. much different.
To your, yeah, well, he was doing cynicism, so it's literally, like, polar opposite. Right. But, like, but to that point, like, you don't know how many people you've impacted, because sometimes people don't always come up and tell you. So to the point you're making is that, like, she went out of her way to kind of say, like, you made this huge impact.
Right.
Lord knows who else you're actually impacting.
Right.
You know?
Well, and that's when people ask, like, what's your favorite part of comedy, or, you know, things like that. That's what it is for me, is that for an hour and a half or whatever time the show is, you know, there could be 8 people in the audience, or there could be 200. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Those people don't know each other. They all have shit going on. They all have something going on in their life that they're there laughing at the same thing. If you can make a group of people laugh that don't know each other and you're just taking away that stress for 20 minutes at a time or whatever it might be, like, that's the coolest part about it for me. Absolutely. Is that all these people have got bullshit. Everyone has bullshit. Whatever it is, your boss is an asshole, or you might, you know, you're out of money, or you're, you know, your kid's dad won't come see him. You know what I mean? Like, everyone's got some kind of shit going on. So that's the coolest thing to me, is to look out and be like, none of these fucking people know each other. They're all here for the same reason. And they're all,
and for a second they forgot about all that. Yeah, and they're laughing right now.
For an hour, for an hour and a half at a time, none of that matters, you know?
That's so cool.
That's what I like about it. And that's, I mean, that's what also keeps me happy, is like thinking like, okay, well, at least these people are having a good time. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's not all bad. The world's not all bad if all these strangers can get together and have a good time doing the same thing. I feel the same way about concerts, too. I can only imagine musicians feel that way.
Sure.
You know, when they
That's like my fantasy, is to be like good enough to just play music on stage and people just be like, what? Because that's how I am at concerts. Like, one of my favorite bands, when I go to see them, I don't even know who to stare at because they're all so good individually. And then as together, it's like, when they're together, it's like a complete experience.
Yeah.
And they make you like feel things that you didn't even like. It's so
that's
crazy.
Awesome. That's so great.
That'd be like amazing.
I always like to think of it as like, there are days when I'm just like excessively happy, and it could just be because I'm manic. But there are days where I'm excessively happy, and I feel like comedy is like a way to donate that happiness. You know what I mean? In some ways, where it's just like people are shit, and then I'm just like, look at me, I'm being stupid. Like, just to kind of like get that like all out there.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, cool. I love that.
Hey, joking on my pizza.
Get it together.
So how, like, was there somebody in your life that sort of, I know you mentioned your dad. Oh my God, I'm choking.
Take a minute. Take a breath.
Cheers, Jamie. Right.
So, hello, hello.
This is a test of the emergency broadcast. Technical difficulties. So you mentioned your dad. We kind of mentioned, like, you know, crying doesn't help, and you know, you kind of have to move on. Was he kind of your inspiration for becoming sort of the rocker, the stable one, sort of in your circle?
I honestly don't know. To be like, I've always been like, I've always relied on humor and things like that, even as a defense mechanism. You know what I mean? Like, people make fun of me or whatever it might be. I've always tried to deflect that kind of stuff with humor. Like, if I was sad, I'd try to make a joke about it. And I think that also helped. I know that's not a great thing to fall back on, like to never take something seriously. Sure. You know what I mean? But I think that also helps with keeping, you know, the glasses half full, because it's just like, in those moments of everything shitty and nothing's going right, if you can kind of just laugh at something that's stupid about it, or, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't this happen? Right. You know what I mean? Of course this is happening today. And like, you know, so I don't know if there was necessarily an influence or anyone that was particularly lighthearted or anything like that. I've just kind of always been that way. I've always been, like you said, I was a cheerleader. I've always cheered, but not whatever. Yeah, you have to be excited and optimistic when there's 2 minutes left and you're down by 43. Like, that's how I understand. But, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm just always kind of, it's sad to go the other way, you know? Like, it doesn't, what good does it do? Like, I mean, like you mentioned, Ryan, being cynical, like, just doubting everything all the time and being upset or being mad or being pissed off about this, that, or the other, like, oh, why would I win that? Or why would anything go my way? Like, that's just such a sad way for, I think, to live your life.
And
like,
you might as well put all of your time and effort into being positive, as opposed to being, you know, like, just looking at all the negative aspects of life, because at least then you may potentially help.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just focusing on everything negative and bad in the world, you're just going to be pushing things back.
I don't like being sad either. That's the thing. Like, nobody enjoys sadness. So it's like, if I have the choice, I'm going to try to make the best of it, whatever the scenario is or the situation is, you know, because what's the alternative? You know what I mean? The alternative is being upset or being sad or being aggravated or, I don't know. I would just, if it were like it is, you know, like my choice is just to try and be happy or try and see the bright side of things, you know? And sometimes there isn't a bright side. I understand that. Sometimes shit sucks. Like, that's just all there is to it. When you just are like, okay, well, this is the worst. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Whatever that might be, you know? And so you just kind of got to take it one step at a time until you can see the lighter side of it, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't want people thinking I'm out here like, I'm all happy and rainbows, because I've had freakouts. I've had, you know, been super angry or super depressed or whatever. Everybody has those emotions. I just choose to deal with them in a more a more lighthearted manner when I can. When it's time to step back and analyze it, remove myself a little bit from the situation, I try to see it as okay, you know.
Yeah, you have like a sense of realism about like everyday situations and things that you go through. But then from that, you choose optimism.
Right.
You choose to like see the good in things.
Right.
Yeah.
I think I empathize with that a lot, but I think it might be for a different reason. Like, I don't know. So something I kind of wonder is, I mean, if you've always been this way, then it probably isn't the case. For me, I default a lot to optimism because I have been in the like absolute pits of depression, like the worst depressions I can remember like in my life. And they hurt so much and they were so painful that like, now I do what you do. I'm much more optimistic now as a result because it's a wall. It's a defense mechanism. Like, mm-hmm. against, I can't ever go down that road and start really leaning into this feeling because I don't know that I can pull myself back out of it.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm not sure if you've ever had that feeling where you're worried about slipping down like that alley. Or
you know what? Honestly, now that you bring that up, that might be what it was. Like, I grew up, my parents were divorced when I was pretty young. They split up when I was in sixth grade. And after that, my mom's always had an issue with hoarding. It was a big reason why my dad left, to be honest. And it just went so downhill from there. So I think it, like, things like that where, you know, you've been at your lowest and your bottom. And I know it sounds crazy to say in sixth grade. You know what I mean? But I lived with her through high school and things like that. So it's like if you don't see the brighter side of things or – and, you know, I was so mad for a long time that they split because I thought that was the whole reason why everything went south. Like, that's why – we have all these cats. And, like, that's why the shit is packed to the ceiling or whatever. But in reality, once I was a little bit older, I could see, like, oh, this wasn't a healthy marriage. This wasn't good. It's a better thing that they've split for, you know what I mean, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it takes a long time to get there.
Yeah.
You know? Like, and like you said, building up that wall, like, there's still issues with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think everybody, you have your own defense mechanisms and things like that because, like, that's something I'm kind of struggling with right now. Like I said, I'm a hopeless romantic. Like, I love love. When I see two people genuinely in love, I get so excited.
Me too,
and it's awesome. Yeah. And you want to see that and you want that and everything like that. And, you know, I a couple years ago called off a wedding. So it's like I'm not ready at a point to trust myself with someone else again.
Sure.
But I can still appreciate it and know that when the time is right, it'll happen.
Yeah.
And that's something I've come around to in the last, like, 6 months. Okay. Has been like, hey, when the time's right, it's going to come around. You know, I deleted dating apps. Not that you shouldn't try.
Yeah.
But I've got so much other stuff to focus on and put my energy in that, you know.
It's not a priority.
It's not a priority. Yeah. And it's like you said, like, I've been in that depressed state. So there's that part of me that's like, well, if you fall in love again, that might happen again. And that's super scary that you're like, can I even trust someone else? You know, but that person's not the same as anyone else. You know, it's a case by case kind of a thing. So there's absolutely necessity for growth and need for that necessity for growth. I don't even know if that's the right way to say that. But like need for growth, you can't always be super optimistic in those moments. But you can kind of, as you're going through it or looking back on it, be like, oh, okay, you know. From this standpoint or with this new light or whatever, whatever kind of thing. So
I think it's interesting. It kind of seems almost like a dichotomy between being really, really practical but also being really sort of idealistic. You know what I mean? Because on one hand, you know, you were mentioning how you looked at the actual facts of your parents' marriage and that sort of helped you to be like, oh, this isn't, you know, this happened because of all these other factors and you kind of looked at the logistics of the situation. But then there's this other piece where it's just like, yeah, you know, when I meet someone and we fall in love, then that's going to be it because that was what was predetermined to happen. You know what I mean? I love that. Like, I don't think a lot of people can find that balance. I think most people are either very, like, romantic, idealistic, or people are very, like...
realist.
Yeah.
I feel like my brain is so split. Like, I'm pretty much, like, left and right brain, like, half and half. But I have those exact moments where I'm just like, you know what? Like, the right person's out there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even just as an example, it's like... like, you don't need to stress. Who cares? Do your thing. Like, you don't even, like, want to be in a relationship. You love being single.
Yeah.
And then, like, the next day I'm just like, for no reason.
No,
like,
what being single is.
Like, and I haven't even tried to date people. And I'm doing that, like, dude. Because it's, like, crazy. So it's just weird how brains work. Like, I can be just as optimistic as I can, like, just sink myself into a hole. But then at the same time, I have to be like, nope, don't.
Right.
don't do that because it's not going to be pretty and right. you're not going to get out of it.
No, I hear you, girl. Like, that's just one of those things, too. Like, you said the realism part of it, and this is, might sound weird or whatever, but was I really think that came from years and years of therapy.
Okay.
Of, like, having someone, you know, tell them your feelings and them explaining it to you.
Yeah.
It was at a very – the big part of it for me that I was doing that was, like 19 to 23.
Okay.
Which are very formative years oh, yeah. for a person. So when, you know, I actually started going – regularly, like once or twice a week. I didn't get into pharmacy school. My high school sweetheart and I broke up. Mm-hmm. And like, I just started drinking a whole lot. And like, I was just like on a downward spiral at a very young age. So my mom actually recommended that I go to therapy. And
my
I
mom
did
too.
Right. And I did. Yep. And, but it was one of those things when you're having all those crazy emotions that even at 19, 20, 21, you don't understand.
Yeah.
To have someone explain them to you and say, okay, well, what do you think about this? Or how does, you know, when this thing happens, is this a trigger for you? Or, you know, I might have just had a really good therapist because I'm after those couple years, I've kind of taken that, you know, that outlook on life where it's like, okay, this made me so incredibly mad. What made it mad? Was it the words that they said? Or was it where the words came from? You know what I mean? You know, because anyone can call you a dumb bitch, whatever, but if... Who's
what is that about?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think being analytical also helps to be optimistic.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. I mean, so first off, I want to commend you and your mom for having to go to therapy during formative ages because I think more people should do that.
Right.
And I think it's funny. It's kind of clicking with me. Like, Mary obviously looks way younger than me, but I always forget that she's younger than me because you seem so fucking like you have it together. At least from a perspective, you know what I mean? Like, you're not just like... straight up emotional, or you're not just like straight up cynical. Like mm-hmm. you have a balance, which younger comics I don't think have. Like a lot of younger comics get very political or passionate about something and they only see it one black and white in right. one way. And just yeah. like there are very few people until they get into like well into their 30s that they're like, well, wait a minute. Like
right.
almost everything is gray. There's no black, right. nothing is black yeah. and white.
I can see like both sides of everything.
Yeah. Yeah. And
which can be good and bad sometimes.
And that's also why like the company I keep are like, if they're like substantially younger than me, it's because they're like that kind of person. They can right. balance very easily between like being logistical, but not so like, not so pragmatic that they just become like, oh, everything's a fucking toilet and everything sucks.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They have at least some dreams and hopes and aspirations mm-hmm. and, you know, look forward to things. Right. So that, I mean, and that's the thing. I think there is a huge merit in therapy just because it's an impartial party that kind of comes back to you.
Right.
And gives you that perspective because when you're in your own head with the emotions affecting you directly, you have all these biases. You have all these, you know, you know, you think people are doing this and that, but really when someone from the outside is like, I don't think that's what's happening. You know what
right.
I mean?
Oh, that's so important,
it's
yeah.
I mean, and you don't have to go to therapy to do that. If you have a level-headed friend or someone that you trust,
right.
just to see it from an outside perspective, right. The fact of it being a stranger is what helps, I think, so much.
Sure.
That they can see it 100%.
Not be biased.
Non-biased. Whereas a friend might say, that guy's an asshole. Or you know what I mean?
Right.
Or whatever it might be. So,
because some people are just so overprotective of you. Right. Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's the other thing. I have a very, very good friend of mine who is one of the most honest people I know. And that's super important to me because I know that I can go to her and I can say, hey, A, B, and C, this is the situation. And she'll be like, well, you're being kind of a bitch. Like,
okay.
you know what I mean? And she'll okay. straight up. So I think it's also very important to have people like that in your life that are going to check you, that are going to say,
yeah.
hey, you're acting a little crazy, or that's not really how that situation went. You know, you're remembering it wrong or whatever. So.
And then the other sort of what makes symbiosis out of that situation is someone who's willing to hear it. Because that's,
oh, yeah.
that's the experience I've had is that I can be very much like, you know, I can be kind of momish about stuff and be like, do you think that's the best idea? But then I have a lot of friends that are like, how dare you? You know, mm-hmm. like, this is my life. Don't tell me how to run it. Like, you know, don't, you know, they don't want to hear it because they're very either sensitive or insecure about their own sort of issues and they don't want someone else pointing that out. So it's good for you to be open-minded to hearing that, people.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because
I don't ever want to be a dick on purpose. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, or at least unprovoked. Like,
yeah.
someone's being an asshole to me, whatever. But, like, you know. Whatever the situation might be, that's why I try to, like you said, you just want to be happy and make everybody happy and be in a good mood. Nobody wants people to hate them.
Right.
You know, and
yeah.
I've, you know, hey, if I'm being an ass, tell me, or if I said something to offend you, I never meant, you know,
sure.
99% of the time I don't mean it, you know,
right.
so, or it's goes under the radar. Like, it's like, oh, I didn't even mean anything by that when I said it, or,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's important, like you said, to have people, and I will always be receptive to criticism because if you're not getting criticized, you're not getting better.
Exactly.
If you surround yourself with people who are like,
yes,
oh my
man.
God, you're the best.
You're
the
Donald
best person
Trump.
Ever. It's
yeah.
like, right. It's like, you're never gonna grow as a person, and especially in comedy. Like if you're like, if you're surrounding yourself with people who just think he was cute, who was that?
I think that's our next guest, maybe.
Oh,
the David, maybe. Oh, could be.
Anyway,
Mr. Cute Boy, what?
Right?
We're like looking out the window. What's going on?
You know, if you're constantly surrounding with people who are like, "Oh my God, that's the funniest thing I've ever heard," or "You're so funny," then it's like you're not gonna want to get any better if you don't think you bomb.
Yeah, you don't want to be like too comfortable,
right? Exactly.
In that situation, yeah.
Or not even about comfortability, but just like learning, not learning. What's the word I'm looking for? Like understanding that it's okay when things don't always go right. And it's important for them not to, you know, and that could be a bad set, like, or like in love. It's important for things to go shitty in your life.
Right.
Because then you learn how to deal with them and make them better.
Yeah.
Or see them from a better.
Can you imagine how shitty of a comic we'd all be if like we always just got applause and laughter bombed?
That's why the open mic scene can be so detrimental sometimes because people won't leave it. And then they're just telling jokes for their friends who already think they're super funny.
Right.
So it's like, oh, well, yeah, of course if you tell a joke to six people in the room about all six people,
sure,
you're going to kill every night.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's just like you have to be realistic. I think optimistic and realistic go hand in hand.
Sure.
Maybe not for everybody. Some people are dumb enough.
I think it really legitimately does require like some level of idealism. Because when you're realistic, you can very much slip into, you know, cynicism territory where it's like, there's a lot of shitty shit going on and you're being realistic about the fact that there's shitty shit going on. But that idealism helps you balance.
But being realistic about the fact that there's nothing you can do about it.
Right. And then, and what's funny is that was sort of what's ultimately, I think, ironic is that was Ryan's take, which is, nothing we can fucking do about the world being a toilet. You know what I mean?
Like, right. I mean, there is, that's when people get on, you know, you join groups and, you know, start marching and all those other things. And I'm saying that those are very important things to do and they can change the world. And I completely understand that. But I also think it's a pick your battles kind of thing. If you have very strong feelings about A, B, or C, but someone like Ryan, who is so concerned with every single... He lets every single thing get him aggravated.
Yeah.
Every little thing on
the
entire planet.
He was telling us he's trying. He's trying harder. I will tell you he is trying. I can see him trying, but you're right.
And like I said, it's not that you can just put all that in, you know, ignorance is bliss kind of a thing, but it's also like, you know, you got to take care of yourself too. Your mental health and yourself and how you feel and your day-to-day life, you know?
Are you at all like into like... current events or politics or anything, do you pretty much just kind of stay away from those?
I try to stay away from it. I have grown further from my family on those views and things like that. So instead of, you know, trying to change minds or start fights or arguments, I just kind of stay out of it.
Okay.
And I mean, as far as and there'd be plenty of people who would be pissed off about that. You know, like, you know, when people ask me about politics or this or who'd you vote for or whatever it might be, I stay out of it. I'm like, that's not something that I enjoy talking about.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, I have my beliefs, you have your beliefs. There's, why are we even doing this? You know what I mean? And I have a lot of friends that'll get really aggravated with that shit, that you don't take a stance or how are you going to let so-and-so say that? And it's just like, listen, dude, like, I can sit here and I can get into a 3.5-hour argument where maybe by the end of it, my brother, my dad might open their mind a little bit, but by the end of it, they're going to go back to the way that they were in a week.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know if that's cynical. That's not very optimistic of me, but it's also one of those things
realistic,
where it's like,
though, kind of back to your point. You know what I mean? I actually think that that's a much better way to look at it than people who think that just by all the hysterical yelling and just like there was a meltdown online today and one of the
there's a meltdown online every 15 minutes
and it had nothing to do with like any of the original like conversation that was happening, but it's like, what are you guys hoping to accomplish here? Like, are you hoping to accomplish feeling better or superior because you changed someone's mind, your way of thinking, or just the fact that like you crammed your way of thinking down their throat? Like, what is the ultimate goal?
I think if someone genuinely wants to have a conversation, then yeah, I'm all for that. That's 100%. We can sit down and we can talk like adults.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to fucking chime in on someone's idiotic Facebook
like debates,
post.
Like intentional debates, like even in person, it's just like, no.
And I don't surround myself with those kind of people. Yeah, so those are the people you show up to a party and you accidentally get trapped in the kitchen with them. And you're like, God damn it. Like, how did this fucking happen?
So,
where'd everybody go?
A bunch of my family.
Right. This is a person you don't want to be stuck at the pie table
Uncle
with.
Frank.
Right.
Well, I will not talk
I
to you about this.
I think the problem is people keep trying. So I have a whole rant, but basically people keep trying to have interaction online anymore. I think that's a big problem. There's not enough face-to-face interaction. And they only want to have these conversations in a manner that effectively renders us all... to be online is almost in some ways what it must be like to be on the spectrum, because you don't have the person's facial expressions. You don't have their tone of voice. You don't have anything else to base it on other than what the words are there that they're writing and the tone that you attribute to, oh, this person's being an asshole, when really they could be being sarcastic. They might not mean anything by it. And they keep wanting to have these really heated conversations about controversial topics in a way that you have no idea how to gauge how the other person's trying to have the conversation. Whereas if we're having the conversation face to face, you could totally see the person's trying to diffuse, or this person's genuinely wants to know why is this or why is that. So I don't know. I think it is kind of smart from your perspective just to stay the hell out of it. Also, it probably helps as a comedian really not to pick.
Well, and
either.
I mean, I've never been an overly political person, and I think it's not stupid to take sides on stage or make your points or whatever, but it's just very tough to do it funny and do it in a way.
Oh, yes.
If you can tell a pro-Trump joke that makes both liberals and you know what I mean? If it makes everybody laugh, then you're
killing it.
An awesome joke.
Yeah.
But if you're up there just like, fuck that orange face, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're not doing yourself any favors, and you're only alienating the audience.
Yeah.
That's all you're doing. So maybe I've never been a political person, like I said. It's not my style of humor at all.
Right.
But if you can do it and you can do it well, then I commend you.
Well,
I say do it. But
and I think it was Jess
most people cannot.
Talking about virtue signaling, where a lot of people go into rooms where they know what the crowd
mm-hmm.
sits, and then they just go up there and say as much stuff about Hillary or Trump or whatever because they're kowtowing to whoever's in the audience. And again, you're not saying anything that's interesting or original. You're just, I'm giving them what they want. I'm telling them what they want to hear. And
that's another part of comedy that can hurt you so badly, is playing to rooms that you know what they are, or rooms that you know agree with you.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where it's just like, oh boy, you know.
Yeah.
You could, I could go into a room full of half drunk 29-year-olds from brunch, and they're going to love everything I have to say about dating. You know what I mean? That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
But turn that around and go to a Saturday early show at Hilarities where it's mostly couples in their 50s.
Okay.
That's when you're going to test if those jokes are true and ring true to everybody. You know, it's the same thing with politics or whatever it might be. But
Yeah,
I agree.
I just think it's really you stand out because, you know, I think everybody does try to do some level of politics in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, in this day and age, it's not terribly difficult to do. But I think it's probably even harder to stay away from it. Because that's the thing. I find myself, I've got a shitload of material that I feel like I can't ever use because I have no idea. When I go to L.A., it'll probably be fine. But Cleveland, you just don't fucking know who you're going to get, because we just.
Well, then maybe that's
the
place you should be testing it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're working it out in rooms here where there is such a broad spectrum and almost all rooms you're going to get. I mean, like you said, if you're doing it in the middle of a dive bar in Lakewood, everyone probably thinks the same thing. But if you're downtown and it's a mixed audience, that'll be a really quick gauge of how well written that joke is.
Exactly.
You know?
Well, that's the thing. People always get into these debates online, too, about whether if you... You know, rape jokes should just be banned altogether, or if you do rape jokes the right way. And I'm like, you know what? Everybody should be able to talk about whatever the hell they want to talk about if it's well written and it's funny. That's the bottom line.
Beth Stelling has some of the best material about that ever.
Yes.
And she did XNL Comedy Fest, which is Labor Day weekend at Hilarities.
There
if
it
anybody
is.
Wants to come. She did it several years back, probably 2015 it might have been.
I went, I think it was 2016, it was when I saw her.
It was at Mayhall's.
Yes.
I opened for her.
Yep.
The way she led into that, she, you know, had finished a joke, got an applause break, and then it was kind of quiet. She was getting ready to start the next bit.
Mm-hmm.
And she just goes, what's it called what's it called when someone has sex with you against your will? And then a couple people were weird, but a few people in the audience were like, rape. She's like, good, I'm glad you brought it up. And then she goes into her material, and it's very well written, it's very thought out, and it's extremely personal to her. So that's one thing, is that no one should ever tell a rape joke. Well, if that's something that you've experienced, and it's something that you want to share and take a stance on, and then by all means, why shouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially someone so talented who can now not only say there's a rape victim in the audience, she can talk to them and reach them, or someone's sister, and they're like, oh my God, I never saw it that way, or I never, you know, now I can go tell them this, or you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can open up people's eyes in that way too, without being abrasive.
Sure.
Without being argumentative, without being like, you know, taking such a hard stance. She's still taking a hard stance, but she's doing it a way that's like, hey, open your eyes if they're not already open, you know?
And I think, I don't know, from my perspective, things resonate with me and I become much more open-minded to hearing them when I know they're coming from a voice of experience.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why I think there's this whole, I don't even know how it's still a fucking argument about men, like, why can't we tell rape jokes? Because you will never fucking understand. Like,
men telling rape jokes?
Well, men are the ones that argue that, like, they should be able to if they've been crafted, you know. And I'm like, all right, well, if you've been raped and you have, like, a way that you can talk about
that. If you were, like, raped as a little boy, then go for it.
But just the fact that, like, you just want to go up there and say rape to get everybody's attention. Like, I think a lot of them like to try and be edgelordy, too. Which
well, that's everybody. That's every open micer. That's everyone who's not good at comedy. Everyone who's not well-developed enough is going to they see that it gets a reaction. It's like a six-year-old.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like when a six-year-old learns how to say shit and you're like, hey, and you think it's a little bit funny, they're going to keep saying it because they're like, all right, that elicited a response.
Yep.
Whether the response is good bad, whatever it is.
They got attention, period, yeah.
And sometimes when you're fighting through shit rooms, saying something that gets the attention or quiets the room down feels like you're doing it right.
Right.
But there's a reason you're in those shit rooms.
Have you ever said, like, I mean, have you ever had anybody, like, take issue with, like, something, like, controversial that you had to take out of your act, or is it pretty much?
I don't really talk about many controversial things.
So, yeah.
I have had, on more than one occasion, most recently, it was actually just a few weeks ago, I did a show, it was an all-ages show, and I had a lady come up to me, she was, like, a middle-aged lady, probably, I would say, in her late 50s, okay. Maybe. I say my mom's age, but you guys don't know my mom, so that doesn't matter.
My mom's age.
We're like,
yeah.
But I talked about how I didn't want kids, and she came up to me after, and she was with her husband. Yeah, I posted about this. She was with her husband, and her husband was like, hey, good call, like, never have kids, but, like, they ruined our lives, like, joking around, which is fine, I don't care. But then she told me, she's like, you know what, after you did that part of your skit, I kind of tuned you out. I was like, excuse me? And she was like, yeah, I didn't really like the part about not wanting kids. And I kind of stood there for a second, and I was like, well, would you rather me have them and resent them? And she was like, quiet. And I was like, I think it's a lot better that I know as a 28-year-old woman that that's not in my future. Ugh. So instead of accidentally having a kid and me being pissed off about it, wouldn't it be smarter for me to prevent it? And she kind of stood there and she was like, yeah, I guess I never thought about it that way. And see, that's like, that's an example of being able to change someone's mind.
Yeah.
I could have very well said, fuck you, bitch.
Yeah.
It's my material. I'm going to say what I want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so that's, I mean, you can have those debates and they're not even, they don't have to be debates. They can be conversations.
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah, but she was so mad at me. She's not the first one who said that. I have one lady ask me if I was a lesbian. After I said I didn't want kids, more of accuse
you.
Right. After I said I didn't want kids, she was
That's
like,
"That's the worst." When someone asks you if you're a lesbian, but they're really accusing you.
Are you a lesbian? Or I was just like, "What?" That was at the Roxino. Those people are so old. Jesus. But
I feel like senility is the only thing that would make me like not think twice about asking someone that question. Like,
unbelievable.
I'm sorry. Are you a lesbian? Because you don't want to have children? Because that's the only other option.
But I asked my mom about it because I was like, "Is this like a thing with your generation?" She goes, "That's how we were raised. We were raised that you grow up, you go to high school, you might go to college, you find a husband, and then you have kids. That's what you do.
How does that make it right, though? Yeah. Just because that's what everyone
exactly.
was doing.
Exactly. That's what they know. That's what how they lived. They think all women should be wives and mothers.
And women had to, like, figure their shit out at that time in that regard. Like, they weren't about to go into the workforce and be like, yeah, I'm kind of a workaholic. I like to work at my headhunter job. Like, no, you had to either, like, find a guy to support you.
Right.
Or,
you were an old maid.
Yeah.
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 That you didn't have the options. Like, you were like, well, I better catch him now because it's like, you wouldn't have a house. You wouldn't be able to live out of your parents' house.
How dare I be 32 and single?
Yeah. She must be a lesbian.
Right.
I was like,
they probably do whisper about it, to be honest.
I mean, they shouldn't have to. They come right up and point blank ask you. So they shouldn't have to whisper.
For real, man.
Like, what's going on? So when you go on stage, is it pretty common where you have like a, yeah, this will be fine. Like, you're not normally.
I still get nervous for shows and stuff like that. But it's the more fun you have and the more relaxed you are, the better that's going to go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the crowd can tell.
Yeah.
If you're a nervous wreck, they're going to be a nervous wreck. Because they're like, why is she nervous for this? Like, yeah, why are you nervous?
Or,
I paid money to get in here. Why are you scared?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so the more comfortable and at ease and just... I mean, that goes with a level of confidence as well. Like, yeah, I can do this. Like, this is fine. This is going to be easy or whatever it might be. Or it's, yeah, you need to have, I guess, a little bit of delusion. Not too much, but just enough to be like, hey, this is going to go well. Or be optimistic that this, yeah, I know I'm funny. I know I have X amount of material or I can read this crowd to go whichever way. And, yeah, I think it's important.
Geez, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, as an audience member of all comedy, one of the worst things is when a comedian gets up there and starts, like, you know, they'll tell a couple jokes and they don't get a response from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes things could even be funny, and maybe I'm just not an external laugher.
Yeah,
like, sometimes I'm kind of just like,
yeah.
But I don't, it's not like laugh out loud funny necessarily, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that they suck ass. Like,
yeah.
But I might not go, ha! Like,
I do.
I can't force it. Like, I can't force it. So, but when they don't get that reaction, all of a sudden you can just see they just turn to like getting pissed off. And then they're just kind of like the whole rest of the show. They're like, well, fuck you guys.
Fuck you.
Why are you even here? Do you even know what comedy
is? Fragile male ego.
And you're just like
always men. I've never seen a woman get pissed. Or at least like, we'll just shrivel, and soft shoe up.
Or I was like heckled. Like, why don't you go buy some kale chips? Because you're a white lady. And I was like, what? Like,
what are you talking about?
I just came to see some comedy.
Everyone deals with it in different ways. And, I mean, Jess, you can speak to this. Being a comic, there are a few things that feel worse than bombing.
Yes.
I'm sure it is.
And so I'm not giving them an excuse because it takes a long time to get not okay with that feeling, but like being self-aware enough to say, okay, maybe this isn't the right joke for this audience. Mm-hmm. Or being that in the moment.
Being able to quickly reassess where your set's going.
You know, depending on how experienced you are, sometimes you get booked to do 10 minutes and you only have 10 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
So if these jokes don't go well, you have nothing else to fall back on.
Yeah.
You know, so I can see where that is
for sure.
Oh shit, now what? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it's
I mean, I don't have the balls to do it. So I can't imagine.
It's rare. Like, all you're doing is proving their point further than when you're like, well, fuck you anyway. Like, I just feel like,
now
you're just proving their point. You suck. Like, don't do that.
How do you get yourself
out of a jam like that? Like, what's your like parachute that you pull?
I generally will just be like, no. Like, if I do a joke and it doesn't go well, I will address the fact that the joke didn't go
well. And I think that's endearing.
Instead of just like let it, just moving on or just acting like it didn't happen, I'm going to be like, oh, all 60 of you hated that. And I don't really know why.
Yeah.
But if you'd like to tell me.
You'll call them out.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just at a comedy club this past weekend, and the Saturday early show was pretty light. The room holds about 250, and there's maybe 60 people there. And so it was a very small crowd, and they were a little bit older, and they were very tight. So when they would laugh, they would shut up. They'd be like, ha. And like,
oh,
that
man.
Was it. Like, it was, they would
laugh.
Like
a cult.
Right. They would laugh, but they would stop laughing just as quickly. And at one point I asked, because I have a joke, whatever, it's so dumb, joke about bartending. And I asked.
Love bartending jokes.
I said at three different points, you know, just to prove a point. I was like, make some noise if you've been with your significant other for less than 5 years. And nobody made any noise. And I was like, oh, okay. How about 5 to 15 years? And nobody made any noise. And I, like, looked around, and I was like, what the hell is going on here? And I was like, 15 years or more, and, like, one couple clapped. And I was like, so what the fuck are the rest of you doing here? Like, what do you mean? So if you're not dating, why are you all here?
All brother and sister.
Like, and so you kind of just go with that, where you just have to address the fact that no one responded to that.
Yeah.
So now what?
Yeah,
you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean? And I think that that also takes a certain level of comfortability, confidence.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, you have to be ready for whatever they yell out, too. So, like, initiating that conversation, you don't know what's going to be said back.
Yeah.
But it can't be any worse than silence.
Right.
I don't think. Like, when I'm standing there and I look around, I'm like, you guys don't give a shit. Like, could you give me anything?
But see, that's how you should, because that's the thing. When you're not telling them to fuck up, like, when you don't go on the offensive, you're just kind of like, all right, let's explore this. And then you start, like, interacting. Then everyone starts to
become
self-aware.
At least if they, like heckle you, you have, like, more material. You
to
have
be,
just
yeah.
instant
that's
material.
That's what I said this weekend. I said, I would rather have drunk people yelling at me than silence.
Really?
Because I can't tell what's going on.
Okay.
When nobody's laughing and no one's
you
telling me why
they're
not laughing.
You need some type of energy to go off of.
When I'm like, I am not a mind reader. So if I ask you a question and nobody answers, and then I ask a follow-up question and nobody answers, I have no idea what to do with that. But if I walk out on stage and some drunk dude's like, fuck yeah, Coors Light, like I can do something with that. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it might be, so.
Were you always good off the cuff? Like, or are you good at like?
Yeah.
Because I'm not.
That's my favorite thing.
Is it? Yeah. Okay.
I might have always been witty and sarcastic. Sarcasm was a huge thing growing up. It was a huge defense mechanism in my family. Like, everyone would make fun of each other and be sarcastic and deflect.
But
and
like fun or like kind of like snarky?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah,
gotcha.
Mostly snarky, like when we would feel threatened.
Okay.
So then you come back with something else, you know?
Yeah.
It was just a joke, but really you meant it a little bit, you know? So that's always been something I've enjoyed, and it sounds dumb, but I think that bartending helps that a lot too. That's my trade is bartending.
You deal with drunk people.
So I deal with drunk people, and I can be like, people want not to be funny towards bartenders, but they'll like make dumb jokes or say stupid shit, whatever it might be. So I think that has helped me a lot in banter as that goes with comedy.
Yeah.
But yeah.
For sure.
I enjoy it.
Do you think optimism plays a very critical piece, I'm guessing, yes, in how you stay in comedy? Like,
Yeah, optimism and stupidity are the same thing in fucking comedy where you're like, it gets to a, I mean, I'm not going to lie, like it hasn't gotten to a point where I'm like, this is stupid. Why am I even doing this? I'm driving this way, I'm doing this and I'm doing that and blah, 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 blah. And it's just so upsetting and aggravating. And sometimes you feel so stagnant and you're just like, God damn, dude, I can't break this rut. I haven't written a new joke in a month. Like this, my material's bombing. What the hell's going on? But I think that that's when you do need to like take a little look and be like, well, what is going on?
Yeah.
What's been happening? Mm-hmm. And then once you dig into that is where you can kind of start to explore yourself and explore a new possibility for jokes. Like, okay, you haven't written a joke in a month. What have you been doing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of a thing. I've had plenty of weeks. June was like that for me. I only got on stage 6 times in all of June. Mm-hmm. I was working a lot. I moved in like July, so I was working a lot to pay because moving sucks and it's super expensive.
Yes.
So I was working a ton. I just wasn't getting on stage. And when I was on stage, I wasn't happy with my sets. And I was just in a huge funk. And then like just this past weekend, I went and I had great sets. And then like I got a really, really awesome email from the owner. And so like he emailed me and was like, hey, I loved your sets. Da, 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 da. And it was one of those things where it's like, you know, as long as you are still trying to move forward, even when shit sucks, I don't think it's going to go poorly.
Yeah.
You're going to hit those times where you're like, what the hell am I doing? I have no money. I just drove 7.5 hours for $50. Like, what am I doing with my life?
Mm-hmm.
Or I've stuck emceeing or I'm stuck featuring. Why won't I move up? Why can't I move up? Why can't I fill these extra 5 minutes? But you have to have that certain mindset where it's like, okay, well, then let's readjust. This isn't working. Whatever we're doing right now isn't working. So why isn't it working? What can we do, you know?
What's the bright side piece that really brings you back during those times with your optimism? What is it that keeps driving you on even when you're like discouraged by everything else?
I mean, what I would like to say, like it was completely honest, would be like, you know, that lady saying, you know, thank you that, you know, my dad and everything like that. Like those little moments do. But I think more intensely and more honestly, I have a huge fear of failure.
Okay.
Where it's one of those things where I'm not going to devote 6+ years of my life where I'm at right now. And then, you know, obviously I don't plan on quitting. I'm not going to put all that time and effort into something to have it not pay off. I'm too far in at this point.
Sure.
You know what I mean? To think of like everything that I've already done and gone through and sacrificed for what? To just give up because I had a bad month.
And what
you know?
I hate, and I don't know if it's culturally or if this is just what we do as human beings, the idea of like after someone's been doing something for a certain period of time, it's like, well, fuck, I'm never going to do it. And the one thing that blew my mind is I was reading this book by Jenna Fischer talking about like actors and the reason so many people don't make it is because like they'll do it for 10 years and be like, well, this is just never going to happen. And most of the people who make it do it for 20 and then they get their first big break because they
They get so many no's.
Ever. Yeah.
All no's. And then one person's like, you're fucking awesome. And then they book like The Office.
And it requires that level of either optimism, like this is eventually going to happen, combined with I've already invested so much time. Why? Like I'm just undoing all the time I just invested by quitting
what
now.
What else am I going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
and there's a certain like, you know, optimism and I've had plenty of people say that goes hand in hand with stupidity where you're like, oh, why wouldn't it work out?
Yeah, it's not like that.
But it's like you have to also believe in yourself. Like, hey, you've pushed this hard. You know, what else is going to happen? What are you going to do? I can always fall back on bartending. Do I want to be a 6-year-old bartender at VFW? No. Like, that's not ideal. You know what I mean? But it's like,
it doesn't have to happen. You know what I mean?
No, but it is one of those things where I've had to explain this to my dad several times, where he's like, you're playing at, when we had Happy Dog shows, you playing at the Hot Dog Inn? What's that pay?
Hot Dog Inn.
What's that pay? You're playing at the taco joint? What's that pay? I'm like, nothing, 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 because it doesn't. And it's, like, these are practice. This is not what this is. This is just for me to go up and learn and get better and da-da-da-da. And then I'll get, like, a big weekend somewhere with a really nationally touring headliner. And he'll ask that same question. And it's like, oh. Here, you want to see my paycheck? Because it has a comma in it. You know what I mean? Like, and it's stuff like that where it's, those are the things that'll bring you back. And it'll be like, okay, then there are so many things that you have done, even small things, you know, producing shows or putting together a show where this was my dumb idea and 40 people showed up. Get the hell out of here. You know, it's not all about money. It's not all about
whatever. 100%. Like the shows that I put together, even when like 15 people show up, I'm like, shit, I did this. I made this happen. I put this together. People are laughing because I put this whole fucking thing.
Exactly.
Because
you're like, I think it'd be cool to do this. And everyone's like, you know what? I agree. Like that's, you know, it's those little things that you have to think about and keep in the back of your mind. Because it's like, there's plenty of times where I'm just like, God damn, this is stupid. What the hell? Where I get in those ruts and I don't know what's going on or why I feel so sad or why comedy isn't working for me. And then I look back and I'll like make a list, be like, all right, what is five things you've accomplished in comedy?
Well, and you know? What I love about, and I think probably a lot of people maybe don't have as many opportunities, but you really revel in the opportunities. And you're the number one person that if I'm out with people and I see your Instagram, I'm like, look what Mary's fucking doing. Because she'll be doing like a handstand in Hawaii one week. She'll be eating gyros with the Sklar brothers the next week. Yeah. She was on Dennis Rodman's fucking yacht.
I was hopping on that train.
She's like all this, like she has the coolest experiences. So as much as like with the struggle, you talk about the struggle in bartending and, you know, paying your bills and all that shit. You have some of the most amazing experiences of anybody I know personally.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. It's so cool to know you personally I can say, like, my friend Mary did this crazy ass thing. Not like somebody I want, like somebody new and so there's a story about it. No, it's like you have amazing experiences just as a result. I don't know if you find those to be, I mean, I know they don't pay the rent, but somewhat on some level rewarding.
It is one of those things where it's like you have to keep those things in the back of their mind because it's so easy to forget the good stuff.
Yeah.
It's so easy to dwell in the bullshit. It's so easy to be like, oh, you know, I tanked that audition or that set didn't go well or that club owner doesn't like me, you know, but there's 600 other club owners. There's 1,000 other auditions. You know, there's so many things that you can focus on, you know, getting to that point, getting to where you were, where you are, where you want to be. You have to be a little silly and a little dumb and a little, hey, this is going to work out. Yeah. You know,
I mean, you're like a couple degrees away from like Chelsea Handler. Like that blows my mind.
Right.
Like as if they're not cool enough. Like, but then it's like, oh, wait a second.
That's why we're over her fangirling like idiots since you came in here. You're totally like, oh my God, you're literally the coolest person we've had on the show.
No, not at all.
So overall, I mean, would you say as you've gotten older, have you felt like your optimism has waned or it's pretty much stayed the same or...
I think it's become more important.
Okay.
I think it's like when you start to, when something breaks you and you hit, you know, everyone has that experience where you hit your rock bottom and you're like, God damn, I can't go any lower.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. I think that's when things get really important to be, all right, well, here we go. Buckle up. You're not dead.
Right.
You know, it's so funny that but did you die? I think that
but
that's
did you die?
It's so, because it's so true and it's so real. Like no matter what it is, it's like, did it kill you?
Yeah.
No, you're still here, right? All right, then let's keep going. You know, whatever it is. So I think that it's one of those things that definitely is a driving force. And like I said, it's to me, it's easier.
Yeah.
It's easier than being pissed off all the time. It's
100%.
It's easier than being sad or worrying, you know, just being like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know how I'm going to do this. Cause I mean, money's been an issue is probably one of the biggest things that I am concerned about and that I worry about a lot, but it's one of those things where it's like, okay, I know today's Tuesday, say my car payment comes out Friday. Mm. It's like, I have enough money to get me from Tuesday to Wednesday. Mm. And that's a mindset you have to take on the road with you too. If you're traveling for comedy, there are very many days where you're like, okay, I have $19 in the bank. This will get me there tomorrow. I get paid tomorrow. We'll take it from there. That's it. That's all you can do is worry about today.
Yep.
And I think that helps to make things easier to be optimistic. When you take things one day at a time or one week at a time, you know, it's very much so like, all right, well, today's not that bad. You know what I mean? Like
in comparison to other days.
Yeah, like I only have $20, but, you know, I have food at home. So it's not like I need, you know, whatever it might be.
That's
I think
so
it
true.
Makes it a lot easier when you take things a little small scale, which I'm not saying don't. Whoa, Jesus. I'm not saying that you shouldn't plan for the future or you shouldn't think ahead or you shouldn't put things 5 months out. But when things start to get overwhelming, or they start to, you start to feel cynical, or me personally, when I start to feel cynical, or I start to get upset, or I start to get depressed, that's the only way you can do it. Yeah. Is just, hey, today's working out, and that's awesome. Yeah. You know, I'm not just like, you're always smiling. It's like, because today wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Today.
Like, but I do think like some of the happiest people I know have perspective, because like, I talk about this, some of the closest people in my life have full-on nervous breakdowns and anxiety over literally nothing because they've led such cushy, comfort, like stress-free lives.
Mm-hmm. It can get so much worse.
Yeah, exactly.
No matter what your situation is, it can get so much worse so quickly.
And I think if it hasn't actually, if worse stuff hasn't happened to you, it's just an abstract sort of cliche to say, oh, it can be worse. But like, when you've literally been through like I said, the pits of depression, I don't ever want to go back there.
I was actually just talking with another comic. That's funny that you say that. We were talking about a younger comic, and we were saying how they're so goddamn funny, but they're 23. Mm. And we're like, I can't wait for this person to just have their heart torn apart.
Because
I was like, once you get that, like you said, that perspective, that, you know, just that real life experience, I'm like, they're gonna be unstoppable.
Yep.
Not that, you know, they're very talented at the moment, but and the girl that I was talking with, the other comic, she was saying, I agree. She's like, until you are laying on a bathroom floor dry heaving from crying so hard.
That's what was in my head when I was talking about the pits of despair. It was me on my bathroom floor dry heaving. That was like the worst depression.
Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. I told her, I was like, I always used to try and wait to cry in the shower because it felt
the
like
the shower water.
Just sit down
and drown out the heaving sounds. And like,
God.
The acoustics are okay, but I just turn the music up. I think that you need that. You need those rock bottom places to know where you were and where it's been worse, and you can always come up from there.
Yep.
And that's helps me to be optimistic. Is like, hey, we're here.
Yeah.
We've been there. That place sucks.
Yeah, you know what I mean? At least we're here now.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So, yeah, I don't know. I enjoy it. I think it's just it's a much easier way to live, to just try to keep everything in, hey, it could be worse, or hey, this is going great. Yeah, A, B, and C really suck right now, but I almost said D is awesome.
But it is, though.
You get what I'm saying. Like, a lot of things suck, but just dwell on the thing that doesn't, you know?
100%. Mary Santoro, I want to thank you so much for being here.
Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
So, admittedly, this may not be out till Labor Day weekend.
Oh, I don't care.
Because we block record like crazy. It might even be a little after. Do you have anything coming up like in the fall you want to promote at all?
Fall.
Crazy.
I'm sorry.
Fine. No, take your time. Gigi, where can we find you on social media?
You can find me on Instagram, ggchick, g.g.chick.
You can find me at epicfall, E-P-I-C-F-A-U-L on Instagram and Twitter. I want to thank Pete Milk for doing our production and recording, and Above Below Entertainment for being our network. Now, Mary Santoro.
I just got a bunch of shit out of state. It's like everything I'm looking at is people Michigan.
People might be listening out of state.
Follow me on Instagram is at Mary Santoro Comedy, and then Twitter is Mary _Santoro. And then here in Cleveland, if you're listening in Cleveland, every other Tuesday we run a show at Brothers Lounge in Cleveland on 117th in Detroit, and every single Wednesday at the Winchester in Lakewood. So I'll be popping in on those, you know, pretty much anytime you hear this or listen to it, that Tuesday or Wednesday we'll probably have a show. So,
and you might see her on The Bachelor or Bachelorette.
Oh, I'm so auditioning for that.
Please, I saw you post that, and I'm like, yes.
Well, you guys make it a huge joke. I'm like, you need me on this show.
You guys, you guys run, Erica and you have a Twitter that you guys live tweet.
Yeah, I've been out of town the last 3 weeks.
Okay.
So we haven't done it. Okay. And we actually had people call us out like, hey, what happened to this?
Following it.
Right. And I was like, I had a wedding and then it was shows and da da da.
Is that what? CLE_Bachelorette?
It's just CLE Bachelorette.
Bachelorette. So yeah. Any of you Bachelorette fans, they're going to live tweet. It's fantastic.
Amazing.
Thank you so much for coming out.
Yeah, thanks,
Mary.
Thanks, everybody. Kay, love you. Bye.